I'm Hannah Young, and you're listening to The Caring Economy with Toby Usnick, sponsored by Philanthropic Impact.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, wherever you are in the world, welcome back to The Caring Economy with me, Toby Usnick. Or in honor of our Latina guest today, I'll say bienvenidos a todos. Claudia Romo Edelman is our guest today. She's the founder of We Are All Human Foundation. This is a woman with a serious track record in launching global campaigns and movements, creating collective action, is a master of agenda setting. She's been in the driving seat of a couple of some of the most successful global campaigns of the last couple of decades, including the launch of the Sustainable Development Goals with the UN, or the SDGs as we call it, Product Red, which I can remember from my American Express days, the creation of the SDG Lions Awards, the branding and rebranding rather of the UN Refugee Agency, and the most amazing of all, perhaps, the World Economic Forum, the granddaddy of such confabs. Claudia is a visionary leader. She's a marketer. She's worked for 25 years with the most recognized institutions. Claudia Romo Edelman, welcome to The Caring Economy.
Oh, thank you so very much for having me.
I've known you for many years and your husband, Richard, for even more. And so I'm honored to be able to sit down today and finally just get to have a little bit more in-depth conversation about some of the great things you're up to. What we do generally on the show to begin is ask our guests to take 2 or 3 minutes and tell us sort of their life story, their narrative, maybe where you were born, how you were raised, how you found your career path.
All right. Well, gracias for having me here today. I am Mexican, daughter of 2 basketball players. My mother was a professional basketball player. She played for the national team in Mexico, and she had 3 kids, and two of them pretty much died when they were babies. So I grew up under a microscope, if you want, for everybody in my family checking out whether I was going to make it or not. And so I grew up, Toby, with always listening and hearing these 2 things. Wow, she's strong, and, you know, like stronger than death even. And the second thing was like, there must be a reason. You probably have a mission to accomplish. With that mindset and that childhood of, you know, like being stronger than death and being having the feeling that everything was possible, because if you can defeat death, you can defeat everything. I went on and became a diplomat. I was living for 25 years in Europe, you know, like working in the most challenging of the goals, you know, like AIDS, tuberculosis, malaria, poverty, maternal mortality, bring it on. I was always a marketer. That's my background. I'm a marketer for social causes, and I learned 6 languages as a way to getting things done. I have 2 children. We moved to America 9 years ago, and that was the first ever time that I heard that I was a Hispanic. I was like, what is that thing? I never heard that word before in my life. I am a happy Mexican, so what are you talking about? And, you know, like, it was interesting because I started like listening to that word, but I didn't belong. I was at the UN with the Secretary General, launching the SDGs. And then all of a sudden I got married to an American, and I was like, all right, diplomatic life, bye-bye, I'm staying. And now this word that I've been hearing is going to mean more, and it's going to become personal. So I want to learn more about it. And I realized that there was an incredible discrepancy from the numbers and everything that I was able to read and find about Latinos and the reality. And that I realized also that because of my choice of getting married, my daughter was going to make 50% of the salary only because she was a Latina. So among all of that, those pieces and those thoughts, I created the World Human Foundation, very much supported by the United Nations, to remind people just of that, that we are all human, that we belong to the same human family. I very quickly started focusing on the Latino community and trying to highlight the contributions of Latinos to the country, to work on our unity, our pride, and our empowerment. I launched a podcast myself 2 weeks ago called A La Latina, Latina Style, to succeed being your authentic self. And I am getting ready to become an entrepreneur. You know, when you're in this country, entrepreneurship runs everywhere, particularly in Latino. So I'm going to start commercializing the family business that my family business has a cactus-based spirit called Sotol. And I'm going to start bringing it to America. So there you go.
Very cool. Well, so that let's go back to two points. First of all, the basketball thing is fascinating. I did not know that about both your parents. Are you a basketball player yourself? Do you feel the team?
I'm not. Every time that I even started taking a ball, everybody was like, "Oh, are you the daughter of Cecilia?" I'm like, "How funny, you don't shoot so well." And I'm like, "All right, done." And my daughter is a volleyball player. She's
Okay.
actually now being recruited for college as a volleyball player. So, yeah.
Good. Well, I don't want to project here, but I have to believe having two parents, such successful athletes and obviously successful parents, how did basketball influence your upbringing? Did you learn team spirit through that, or discipline, or healthy exercise?
There were three things, I think. The number one is my parents, it was a non-negotiable, pretty much. I think that you needed to exercise in order to exist. It's almost like you're not talking about breathing all the time, like you just do it. And I think that that's part of what it gave us as a family, and even in the good times, in the bad times, and so on, the structure, the discipline, the one thing that anchors you. So for me, it's a non-negotiable. I think that for my children, for us, is not. You put it really at the beginning of your day, so that there's nothing
Absolutely.
that takes it away. You learn team building. You learn ex. You know, like you learn routine, discipline, and drive through that. And I am beyond grateful. But I also learned one more thing, which is, Toby, when my mom had three kids and she was about to go to the Olympics that were held in Mexico in 1968, when my mother had my oldest sister, she couldn't play anymore, right? Like, and she kept on having children and so on. So she started studying economy as a transition from her basketball career. And she was a successful economist, I'm gonna say, until one day. She said, I don't like economy. I want to be an actress. And we were like, what? And I saw how my mother went for it. And she became an incredible actress,
Wow.
very successful until the very, very end, recognized by everybody, loved by Mexico. But what I saw as a kid was the same spirit that I saw in the basketball player, on the memories of the basketball player that my mother was, which was she's gonna give it all. And she was going to not let fear take the decisions of her life. It doesn't mean that she was fearless, but she was fear-free. And I think that those two pieces come from the forming yourself as an athlete and just like being able to, excel regardless of where you are.
That is amazing. I share your view on exercise. I can't tell you how often I advise, ask, suggest, encourage young people in particular. At a minimum, just promise me you'll walk 30 minutes every day. And I don't mean on a treadmill, I mean walk, because if you start that discipline early, as you did, as I did, chances are you're going to have a longer life. So, was it the sports that somehow introduced you to the diplomatic life, or how did you find that sort of course?
When I was a child in Mexico, when I was a teenager in Mexico City, there were a series of earthquakes that happened within a week that shook up the entire city, literally torn down. Half of the buildings were destroyed. And so on the second earthquake, on the first day of the earthquakes, everybody went out of their homes and started, looking for your family and friends and to look for shelter, because after the second you thought there was going to be a third and a fourth. And you could see how leadership started emerging in a chaos. And so the one guy, here shelter, here food, here blankets. And I was part of a team that was sweeping the streets of our neighborhood to see whether there was anybody trapped in those buildings. And so we were walking and it was confusing, the ambulance, the sound, and so on. And I just had this instinct that stopped me, and I started shouting out my lungs, like, stop, come back, come back. So there was one guy in my team that turned around and said, like, what? And I said, I think I heard a voice. And he looked at me really upset. And he's like, you think or you heard? And I just saw him even bigger and started shouting even louder, like, come back, come back. So he started walking to me. By the time he was with me, it was clear there was a voice there. So both of us looked at each other and started shouting even louder. And so two more people came and they were shouting, the four of us together, until there were like 10 people and then 20 people. And then until there was enough of us that we started pushing that wall. That was impossible to move alone until for hours we were pushing, and it was like, the moment arrived when there was like light that we were able to break through, and there they were.
Wow.
The eyes of the girl with the eyelashes full of dust, looking at us with panic and saying, like, you got me, right? And that was the first ever time that I felt useful. And it was an overwhelming feeling. It was incredible for me to feel that thing of when I saw the mother hugging the girl. It was incredible. And also, it was the first time that I understood, like, my father always complained, like, you're so loud, you're so loud. I'm like, it's great to be loud. So I've been privileged enough to follow a little bit, to realize that gave me so much energy.
Yeah.
And sometimes suppress so much what, you know, like what our own thermometers of what really we are, what the things that we're good at. And I was able to feel it at a very young age. So I was like, I want to be loud and I want to feel useful. And so I think that that's where everything started for me, being able to like listen to my voice more than my father's voice of you're too loud, or the community voice, or the social voices and the cultural constraints that, you know, like particularly women we have.
Wow, I love that. It's a beautiful metaphor as well, right? You're using your voice for others, you're amplifying it, and you're making it useful. I don't know if I heard this morning on public radio, they did an interview with Arnold Schwarzenegger, who has a new book out, and the message is about making a useful life and how one does it, what he's gleaned. And he talks about his father, as you've talked about your father, and challenging him, like, don't just lift weights if it's going to help others in other ways. And so obviously, with this podcast and your work and my work, it's all about purpose and higher purpose. So I'm grateful for your sharing that story about how it began. We want to talk about the foundation, but first, will you set it up for our listeners who may not, or viewers who may not know what brand building is or campaigns are, so that we can then go into what the foundation is?
There are things that affect us all, whether it is, you know, like, for example, if there's a pandemic, we all need to be informed. We all need to start going into a vaccination campaign. So, like, if that is a decision of, you know, like, of science and government, then you have to do mobilization campaigns. For me, it was a lot of related to AIDS, tuberculosis, malaria, a lot of public health, a lot of gender campaigns throughout my life. Or, for example, the launch in the case of the Sustainable Development Goals, of making sure that now that we were able to have a master plan for the future of the people on the planet, that 193 countries for the first time ever agreed on something. They agreed there are 17 things that we have to do so that everybody can have a dignified life, that we can have a planet that is successful, that we have peace and prosperity. So my job was to create, if you want, the master plan to mobilize the hearts and minds of people all across the world. And how do you do that? It's called a mobilization campaign. So whether it is creating movements, making it cool, transforming it into an emotion, breaking it down so that you're like, okay, so how do I make everybody know? All right, so we're going to talk to all the televisions of the world, all the internet companies of the world, or at least the most important ones, to support us and to be on board of us. We want to talk to companies so that they can see this brand that you have to create to say the Sustainable Development Goals, what is that and how do I care? Why do I care? So you want to make it cool. So you create a brand and you want to see that brand in the talking points of people. You want to see it in the box of the cereals. You want to see it in places that educate, inspire, and allow citizens also to know that they have rights.
And you've done it so well. I mean, the three that come to mind, I'm thinking the RED, the SDGs, World Economic Forum. RED, I remember at American Express, it was AIDS activism. And we had American Express, Armani, Gap. You brought in major, major brands to give a certain amount of proceeds from their sales to the cause, right?
Did I have that correct?
And that was groundbreaking at the time, right? A collaborative
it's
effort.
It's groundbreaking. It is $650 million, that product RED. That, by the way, is amazing. You know, like, you have a RED phone, it looks great. Like, and you give consumers the opportunity to consume with pleasure and with purpose. And you're like, between choosing one product or another, I'm gonna choose the one that is gonna, like, is gonna make me belong to a group of the champions that make a choice to make it better for others. And I do think that that's where I feel the opportunity for Latinos is, that right now the country understands I think that how important it is to have the minorities that are making the middle class and are bringing the economy together, make them part of it. And companies and everyone probably wants to be able to have a choice. Like, how do I support Latinos if I know that Latinos are the future and they need better education, they need better health, they need better gender equality? How do I, as a consumer, as an employer, as a neighbor, as a company, how do I make that simple? How do I help? And that's where I think that the beginning of the World Human Foundation started.
So tell us a little bit more, Claudia. So the foundation you started in 2017, 17, right before the world stopped. Give us an overview.
The World Human Foundation came as a result of the data that I saw when I was working at the United Nations, that indicated that racism, xenophobia, and discrimination were the fastest growing sentiment in the world. And it was getting by far more traction than any other sentiment. And it was a real danger for all the progress that we have made as a society. We have made so much progress, and people don't know, Toby, that this is the best time in our history as humankind, because we're so bombarded by negative news, we're so bombarded by all that noise that we think that we're going down. In reality, we're just going up. Maybe not as fast as we want, maybe not in every aspect, but overall, the humanity is eradicating extreme poverty by half. Women have more access to education, to vote, to electricity than ever before in our lives. So we're making progress. But I saw that this one could have a derailer on that progress. If you start allowing the feeling of otherness to grow, then that means that, and technology, I have to say, the algorithms that feed you with what you want to hear and give you what you want to see accentuate that bubble. And you see that when you have that, then what happens is when you come out of your little bubble for a while, you're like, who are you? And what are you doing?
Yeah.
And that means that you're going to probably say, like, you don't have access to health, you don't have access to education, you don't have the same access that I have. And that was a predictor for the George Floyd of the world, for the Brexits of the world, and so on. So we created the World Human Foundation to remind people that we are interconnected, that what happens to one hand affects the entire body, that you know, like, the world is browner, more feminine, and with a bigger heart than ever before. And we are gonna be able to, you know, like, understand our diversity, make it inclusion, and move the needle from tolerance to acceptance. And so the World Human Foundation started to, you know, like, bringing those issues of diversity, equity, and belonging in 2017, you could see, as I said, you could see that racism was going to go up, that polarization was going to go up. And then the pivot there was that while that was great, you know, like, and it was going to take off, and I, you know, like, I somehow knew that it was necessary, I started looking at home and my own now country and my own community, and it was personal. So I started pivoting the World Human Foundation to have a stronger initiative on Latinos. So we created, from the World Human Foundation that had its own activities and still does, pivoting on more to create the Hispanic Star Initiative to allow Latinos to be part of that diversity, equity, and inclusion, and understand what is really happening that stops Latinos from fulfilling their potential, and what are the potential consequences that if that happens to the entire country, to every industry, to every company, and how do we revert it, and what is the role that we can play?
Ladies and gentlemen, again today on The Caring Economy, we have with us Claudia Romo Edelman. She is the founder, actually, of We Are All Human Foundation. She's a podcaster extraordinaire, diplomat, and entrepreneur. And mother and wife, she's everything. Claudia, can you tell us a little bit about the December event that you're doing, the Hispanic, it's 2-day seminar to advance the mission, right, of the foundation?
That's right. So the World Human Foundation, under the Hispanic Star Initiative, recognized the three most important insights that we have been trying to tackle all along, which is how do we make sure that Latinos are unified and have a single agenda that we're pushing together so that all of us can be seen and heard and valued? And how do we bring allies to the table so that everybody understands that what is good for Hispanics is good for America, so that we should work together? In that spirit of unification, of bringing agendas forward, we bring the 600 most important leaders, Hispanics and non-Hispanics, to the United Nations December 6 and 7 to discuss our agenda. This is particularly relevant for corporations because of the size of the Latino community, there's no way that you can hire or sell or supply from without Latinos. Right. It is particularly relevant for Latinos within organizations that want to make a difference because they feel they cannot be themselves, for leaders to be able to express their strategies, to learn from the best practices, to get data and be fully equipped so that you can create a Latino strategy that allows you to connect genuinely with Hispanics as employees, as the consumer and the community. It allows Latinos to understand how to together build strategies to increase our perception and our representation. So 2 days where you're going to be fully equipped with data, with case studies, with networking opportunities, and with expertise, so that everybody can go back and start working on the agenda for 2024, integrating Latinos as part of their business strategies.
And that's involving everyone. You've got government, civil society, corporate leaders, and so forth, young people and all. Can you tell us how we find more information if we want to be in touch or be attending that day?
Absolutely. And following that Hispanic Leadership Summit, I think that my most exciting and scariest organization event ever in my life is our gala. Our gala concludes the Hispanic Leadership Summit. This gala not only helps organizations like mine, my organization, this gala not only helps the World Human Foundation to continue doing what we're doing, because Toby, what we're doing is working. Mm. We're helping companies. We work with 320 companies. We have produced more content that shines a light on the positive contributions of Latinos in the country. We're equipping schools. We're providing pride and unity to Latinos. So our gala really is the way for New York and the country to come together, celebrate Hispanics, support the World Human Foundation, but also have an incredible night. In being inspired and being able to come with us while we produce and change that. We want to be the Met Gala for Latinos. And I think that's going to be a great thing because it's going to help everyone to reimagine and rethink what Latinos are and stop seeing us as gardeners and supporting the kitchen and start seeing us as what we are, architects, astronauts, an integral part of society, understanding that America is made of stars and Hispanics are one of them. So all information can be found at the hispanicstar.org. or at the wearehuman.org foundation.
I love that. That's amazing. I know with you and your glamorous ways about you and Richard, you'll be the Met Gala for sure. Now that we're celebrating and sort of identifying the demographic and working with it, I'm going to ask you to comment on the distinctions within. And by that, I mean, it's never safe to really generalize wholly for a group of people. We all know once you're in an organization, there's subsets and stuff, but what are some of the myths that there are about Latinos or Hispanics? You know, they're certainly not all the same and think and do everything alike. And I wonder if there's any myth busting you might want to do about helping us appreciate just the individual while also being all human.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that there are three things I'd like to say. First, on the names, the most common question that I get is is it Hispanic, Latino, Latinx? And the answer is, it doesn't matter. You can call us whatever you want. As long as you pay us well, you can use whatever. Only 3% of Latinos even know those distinctions. But for me, I use them interchangeably. And Hispanic comes from Spain or the language. Latino from the geography, Latin America, has nothing to do with gender. Latinx or Latine is a gender neutral form of Latinx or Latino. But we don't care. The labels are labels and they're distracting, if not confusing. Second, Latinos are absolutely not monolithic. We are everything and anything, huevos revueltos, just in there. So we're 26 different countries of origin. 21 of them speak Spanish, and all of a sudden we're put together as one, Hispanics or Latinos. And that that unity is something that that we're gonna start working every time more, so that we act as a one community. But this community has in it, like one in every three African American is a Latino. People don't know that. That makes us almost 15 million Afro-Latinos. One in every four Native American is a Latino. 22% of Hispanics identify as LGBTQ. So you have it all there. And yeah. Latinos have been very creative in finding their differences. Like, oh, Mexicans don't want to talk to Cubans. So your ceviche has more lemon than my ceviche and so on. But we're working towards that unification. And I think that the last piece I want everybody to know is that Latinos are the future of the country. We're driving America's prosperity, power, and progress. And I'm not saying that only because I'm a super proud Latina. I'm saying that because the prosperity, economic prosperity of America depends on the 62 million people, which are 20% of the population today, generating 14% of the GDP. The size of our economy is $3.2 trillion. That is, if you put that just like as a standalone economy, Toby, we would be the fifth largest economy of the world, larger than Brazil, larger than the UK, larger than Italy or Canada. So we're driving the America's prosperity through our frontliners, through our entrepreneurs, that is one in every five. We're the power culturally. There's more salsa sold than ketchup. There's more tortillas sold than bread. The music, we're in the number one, two, three top hits in music. We're also politically powerful. There's no way that a politician can go without the Latino vote today if they want to win an election. And the last piece is we're progress. We're making progress in every single aspect in our indicators. And that's what we really want. Yeah. So Hispanic progress is American progress.
Agreed. It's also the American dream, don't you think?
Totally.
It's always been. And you didn't mention there, but also tequila, which makes me ask about your entrepreneur side. So it's not tequila, but you're launching a family brand here in the US that is cactus derivative, but it's alcohol.
Yes. So it is like the tequila of the North. It's called Sotol, S-O-T-O-L. If tequila and mezcal would have a baby, it would taste like Sotol. It is one of the fastest growing categories. The New York Times named Sotol the drink of 2023 and the decade. Lenny Kravitz just launched his Sotol. My wow. family has been producing for the last 40 years, but we never commercialized it. We drank it all. So now... because of the consumption is going so is growing so much because consumers want authentic, genuine new things, and because Sotol has 1/3 of the calories of even tequilas, wow. make the least calorie product of the entire category of spirits. Then we decided to start commercializing. I'm the first woman in my family that gets to get into the business, and I'm very excited to bring Sotol to the world.
I'm excited for that. And I'm wondering, besides yourselves, who else is going to be your spokesmodels? Because that, you know, you get George Clooney behind something, or Randy Gerber, or Ryan Reynolds, and things sell. So I'm thinking there could be some great Latinas who are like your models.
Exactly. Exactly. No, I'm excited. The category itself is, you know, like people are dropping the sugar-based alcohol. So they're dropping wine or beer, and they're going more into spirits. And from the spirits, the cactus-based spirits are the ones. And it is really exciting for me to be able to bring the authentic north of Mexico that people don't know and start making teaching and showing more of our culture, our people, the way that we respect our ethic, work ethic, and our traditions, and ideally get everybody to be really happy and very slim. It's like the skinny tequila.
Claudia, I'm very mindful of time. I want to ask you two last questions. One is just about your reflections on bridging leadership, which you're doing so brilliantly. I think that the way forward is really finding common ground, working together. Your campaigns that you've led do that so elegantly and eloquently. I wonder if you have any reflections or tips or ways to help us foster more of that in ourselves and in our communities and our organizations.
I think that particularly for a country like the States that has 20% of Latinos that today, but if you start understanding that Latinos are going to be 30% of the country by 2050, 20% today, 30% of the country. That means by 2050, one in every three Americans will be Latinos is hello, hello, hola. Hello, hello, hola. And if you get that, if you really like are able to get that insight, you're like, okay, so we really need to start working towards how do we make this work? How do I become aware of my stereotypes? How do I build bridges? How do I lean in towards hiring better, towards understanding better, towards, you know, like understanding from both sides? And so if you want to be a great ally, I think that for the Latino community, eat a taco. Get to understand that we are hard workers. Our values are like going and we move forward, we're echados pa'lante, but we feel invisible. So our desire to progress will always make us entrepreneurial, we'll always get small businesses, we're always going to be there, but we feel invisible. So if you bring visibility and if you make choices as just like going to our small businesses and making choices of instead of sending flowers to someone, just like look at the small businesses of Latinos in the bodegas and choose to send churros from La Neoyorquina or flowers from a Latino business. And if you want to go one step further, then to be a real ally is to mentor a Latino. Mm-hmm. We have all the values that are needed. We're honest and decent and caring and aspirational and optimistic and hard workers, but we're also very traditional and respectful for authority, so we're never going to ask you. So if you could invite us and mentor us, the best way to do it is twofold. One is to show us what game are we playing. We don't come with instructions, we don't have the rules of the game, so we have navigation issues. So if you're able to show us like, this is how we work, this is how we operate, this is the tone of voice we use, this is this one, it doesn't mean that we're gonna do it all, but we're gonna know what the rules of the game are. And the second piece is to show us the highest expectations, show us how big you think we can go, so that we can start dreaming big, so that we can get our wings out there and start shooting for the sky, because we need little support. We need to know where we are and what are the rules of the game, but then we need to know that someone believes that we can go further. And that is a great way to lean in, to build bridges, and to understand that we're not gonna take the jobs of anybody. We are Americans, we love this country, and that what is good for Hispanics is good for America because of our size, our youth, and our work ethic.
I love that suggestion. But what about the people on the other end who don't want to lean in, who resent, who fear, you know, the borders are going crazy? Do you just not avoid, but just don't engage because it's unwinnable? Or do you take the long view and find subtle ways over time to win people over? Or how do you do it?
In political campaigns or in global mobilization campaigns, you always have the spectrum of the 100% of the population, and then you cut it into the 20% that are already with you, the 20% that are never going to be with you, and you try to work on the 60%. And our foundation tries to work on providing the data, the facts, the tools, the resources for these 60% to be able to be equipped to make decisions, because most of the people don't really know. They don't know is this a good thing or a bad thing for the country? Am I going to be, you know, like out of a job? Is this a challenge or not? So the facts are clear. And I invite everybody that already got the facts, that understands we're the people, we're the youth, we're the taxpayers, we're the social security, we're really in an aging America, we're the ones that are building the middle class. And when you know that, you can become a factivist, I'm an activist, but you can become a factivist. Just share the facts with people. My husband is a perfect factivist. He goes around and tells people the things that he didn't read in the history books that are there, that are making an incredible contribution of Latinos. How many businesses we started, how many things we brought to the country, like agriculture, how we have been in the country for ages and contributing and paying taxes. And when you become a factivist, it's easier when you're like talking from data and not from stereotypes, and from facts and not from fears. It's much easier to start leaning in and taking your own decisions about who you are. And there's one thing that I think is fundamental. Latinos, we're at 200% of a person. We're 100% Latinos, but also 100% American. So we are as American as there is. Our Hispanic values are American values. Our Hispanic culture is shaping global culture, but we're doing that with a 200% of a person. So you got us because we are you.
Yeah.
And I think that if you understand that, you really start thinking, okay, this is like what is good for Latinos is good for America, because you will carry us forward as Americans.
Here, here. One last question, which is the same one we ask everyone, which is your pearls of wisdom, the lessons you've gleaned in life. What would you, any sort of mantra or tips you give either to young people who are seeking a purpose-driven career like you, or maybe even people who are further on in their careers and have been disrupted or questioning how to put more purpose into their lives and careers? What might your pearls of wisdom be?
I think that it is, unfortunately, we cannot live life backwards. And so the earlier you detect who you truly are, what you really care for, and what's your passion, and you start looking at when passion meets purpose, then you're unstoppable. And sometimes we're unable to see that early on, but my absolute recommendation and the things that I try to get my kids and my nieces and my nephews and everybody that I care for is check your inner thermometer, check where your energy feels right. Whatever you're doing that is natural and comes together, probably that's a trace of who you are, who you will always be, and what you want to do. And the things that are not so natural to you, that don't inject any passion on you, probably those are the things that you're not. And so even if they're great for someone else, like the expectations of your parents or society, it's better not to do that. And once you go into your passion, then you will find your people. And when you have your passion and your people, it's so much easier not to feel lonely. It's so much easier to find the ways in which you can succeed and be doing that, being your authentic self.
I love that. I often liken it to kneading dough. When you get to a purpose-driven point in your life, whatever you do is going to add into that and make it bigger and stronger. Nothing is extraneous and not a minute is wasted. So thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been an honor and a privilege today to get to know my friend Claudia better. Claudia Romo Edelman is the founder of We Are All Human Foundation. She's now a podcaster as well. She's an entrepreneur, a wonderful neighbor here in New York. And hasta la próxima.
Gracias.
Thank you, Claudia.
Thank you for listening to The Caring Economy with Toby Usnick. Please share your comments and questions with Toby via Twitter at TUsnick. Or LinkedIn at Toby Usnick. And thank you for sharing The Caring Economy with your friends and colleagues.